On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thursday the 25th of March.
Coming up on Game On tonight, we ask if Stephen Kenny is on the right path for Irish soccer.
Get Aaron Connolly in the most advanced position for Ireland, just pointing where he wants it, and the cross is delivered but easily cut out. It's drilled out to this left-hand side, it's into Stevens, 25 metres out from goal, slips it forward now to Callum Robinson, just inside the area, digs it towards the back post, and the header goes in, and Ireland go in front in the 18th minute, a really deft header, Alan Brown right on the mark, delight for Stephen Kenny.
Stephen Ferris tells us who's going to win the Six Nations and the Pro 14. No pressure, Stephen.
Stephen Ferris! And Ireland have transformed themselves and the game and the crowd. They take the lead.
That's actually Fez's ringtone, Marie. You know that? We'll also be chatting to our great friend Jeff Shepherd, who is casting his beady little eyes on American sport.
Mahomes throws, pass, caught, Williams, touchdown, Kansas City jumps on top.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Marie, how are you doing? You had a late night last night. You were covering the match for us last night on Game On. It was disappointing, but there was glimmers of hope.
Yeah, like it was a bit of a mixed bag. I think there's probably two ways of looking at it. One is the fact that there was a lot of new players out there because of all the injuries. He was missing 13 players, absentees and injuries in the lead into the game. So he picked a very brave and youthful side, and they delivered for quite a lot of it. They scored two goals. They showed glimpses of what Stephen Kenny is about in terms of philosophy. They kept their shape really well at the back. They were just undone by a team that had some very classy players in their ranks. And when you have someone like Tadic on form, it's really hard to deal with that. And they just couldn't really deal with him. They couldn't negate the influence he was having on the game. And then they had Mitrovic coming off the bench and able to pop up with the goals that he did. So impressive. But I think overall, if you're on the Team Kenny, Team Stephen Kenny, you'll be pretty positive about what the Ireland team were about. If you're looking for results and are unhappy that there hasn't been a win in 9 games, then you probably won't be too happy with the performance. I'm probably somewhere in between. I'm delighted to see that he is working so well with them, and there's a lot of positivity in Luxembourg. The weekend is going to be a huge game, and a result is really, really important. I just like to see them start winning some games now, just so that they can bring a little bit more positivity maybe to the mood around it, because it is hard to keep being energetic and positive about what he's trying to do when we're not getting the results.
Absolutely. And being harsh, in the international level, it's a results business. We're going to be chatting to Paul Corrie and David Snaid very shortly, but we're interested in your view on the Irish match last night. Please do get in touch on 51552 and let us know what you made of the performance or which camp you're in. Are you, like Marie, stuck in the middle, wanting a little bit of both?
Just want to get a result now. I'm happy with the goals, though. Goals are good. We're moving in the right direction. Let's keep it up and get a win at the weekend, and one against Qatar as well. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a bit of disappointing news today in the AFLW for Sinead McGoldrick, Marie, after picking up an injury at a critical time, and it's so disappointing for her.
Yeah, so Sinead Goldrick had been having a really good season down in Australia for the Melbourne Demons and was on track to reach the finals like she was last year when the pandemic hit. So unfortunately she's had a hamstring injury and had to have surgery, so she is going to have to sit out the rest of the season, which is very difficult for her. Hopefully it means that she won't be out for the GAA Championship when it does get going, because she's such a key player for Dublin and everybody would like to see her back playing for them during the summer as well. But I guess I've seen pictures of her on social media and she does seem quite upbeat about it. Look, I think she's probably in the situation where she's surrounded by really good people down there in a professional environment that will help her to get through it. But it will be difficult, I think, when the games get going again for her not to be playing. So the way it stands at the moment with the AFLW is that it is really unpredictable. There is one round left of the regular season. Five of the six finalists have been decided, but the current top six all play each other in the last round. So there's lots of potential for movement, and three teams can still sneak into that sixth position. So far, there's the Brisbane Lions with Orla O'Dwyer, Collingwood with Aisling Sheridan and Sarah Rowe, the Adelaide Crows with Aislinn Considine, Fremantle with Anya Thai, Melbourne with Sinead Goldrick, Niamh McAvoy and Lauren McGee are all through to the finals, and one more team set to join them, which probably will be North Melbourne with Aileen Gilroy. So the Irish girls are doing really, really well. I think the experiment is really working, and I suppose because the GAA season isn't on the horizon right now, it's probably good for them now. They can focus and know that they're not missing out on any league action or probably pre-season or anything like that. Now they can just focus on the job in hand down there.
Yeah, absolutely, and you hope Sinead gets the best of care after giving so much, you know, especially with an injury like that. Marie, you do need the support around you. Hamstrings are so temperamental, and you just wish her the very best luck in her recovery.
It's been tough down there for the Irish girls with injuries as well. We all were following Breed Stack and how she got on as well, and also Ailish Considine suffered a concussion. She plays for the Adelaide Crows, and once that happened, she's found it very difficult to get back into the team, and she's been writing a column for RTE Sport online as well. That's well worth checking out.
I'm following Rob Kearney on Instagram, and I'm not feeling too sorry for anyone down in Australia at the moment. His tan is on point.
Well, we did talk to Lauren McGee that time a few weeks ago, and she just couldn't hide what a good time she was having down there.
She nearly felt guilty about it.
She did, because the weather was lovely. She was playing football. There was crowds. She was going out for dinner. She was meeting friends, and actually her Instagram was great as well, just for showcasing an Irish girl down there in Australia doing her thing. It's well worth checking out. So I think we might as well get back to the football now, because it is the main story of the day, and the dust has probably settled a bit now on the Republic of Ireland's loss to Serbia in that opening World Cup qualifier game. And to pick through what happened last night and also look ahead to Luxembourg, we are joined by David Snaid, journalist, and Paul Curry, former professional footballer. To you first, Paul, just from the players' point of view, and when you think of the way things unfolded last night and Ireland going ahead and, you know, probably being undone by, I suppose, a team that had better individual players within it, how are the players going to be feeling now as they head into the Luxembourg game?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier, Marie, when you said that it was a bit of a mixed bag. I think there are definitely spells from within the game where, from a player's point of view, you will take confidence heading into the Luxembourg game, because I thought there was spells, particularly in the first half, when we kept the ball really well and we moved Serbia about and created chances. And not only did we create chances in the final third, we actually looked for once what I thought we had bodies in the box. Like, you had Conley there, you had Robinson, and I thought Alan Brown did a really good job of joining in too. So I think when they reflect and they watch the video back, they'll be able to see instances when it did work quite well. I thought the formation worked well, and I thought the personnel did quite well too. So if you can look to the positives and look to those little spells, don't get me wrong, we didn't do it for long enough, but if you look at the spells where we created chances and we were good in possession, if you can take that through into a game against Luxembourg where we have got better players than the opposition, well, then I think there's hope there. It's not perfect. It's going to take time. But I think from a player's point of view, if you can look at those instances from last night, there's definitely something to build on.
David, what are your thoughts just on reflection 24 hours on now almost?
Well, you say there about the kind of the dust settling, and I suppose things will only become a bit clearer in this window after Saturday and after the Luxembourg game. Like, Ireland have to win that game. Stephen Kenny needs a win, no matter, but just somehow just to get a win and get that kind of monkey off his back a little bit, because as you said and as Paul has said, there were some positive signs in that game in the game last night. But maybe just it needs to progress now over the course of this campaign, where you actually do see Ireland do what they did for maybe a half an hour, 40 minutes, where they actually do that for a full 90 minutes against teams. And at the moment, it's difficult in a sense, because you can't ignore what's happening on front of you on the pitch, and obviously the results have not been good enough, and bit by bit performances are beginning to maybe slightly improve, but not to the degree where they're delivering results. And as Donegh said, international football, it is a results business. That's what it is going to come down to. And I suppose from the point of view of judging the manager and judging this team, it's going to be at the end of the campaign and also throughout the course of the campaign, where if there is continued progression and improvement, well, then you can point to a job that's being done well. Whether that leads to Ireland getting into a playoff, which I think is obviously is best case scenario, really, when you have a team like Portugal in the group, and even Serbia, who could well put it up to Portugal to actually win the group too. You never know, just with some of the class players that they have. So that's where I would still be coming from at it in terms of judgment and seeing where the team is where how the rest of this campaign goes and seeing that progress. And if we see a good performance on Saturday and ultimately a win, there has to be a win, well then that will provide a fresh bit of impetus then for the remainder of the campaign, you would like to think.
Paul, on that progress, you mentioned the new formation. Was that mainly because of the players we had available, or is this a style that would suit us playing out from the back under Stephen?
Yeah, I like it, Donegh. I think given the personnel we have, I think it suits us. I'm not sure we're blessed with creative players in midfield to play through the third. So if you can have a centre half step into midfield with the ball when you've got that extra cover, that can help. And then also we have fullbacks who are used to playing at a club level, so it makes sense for me. I don't think we're blessed with centre midfielders. I don't think we're blessed with wingers. So I think with the personnel we have, I think it's a formation that suits us. And I always think that you should play a formation that suits your best players. Mm. And in particular, that gets Matt Doherty and Seamus Coleman into the one team. It also gets Callum Robinson and Aaron Condie into the team, and I think they provide at least a threat going forward against centre halves who potentially don't want to turn and run back towards the goal. They're quick and they're dangerous. But even to take it back a notch, like I think we really need a dose of reality here. I don't think there's any chance we're going to qualify out of this group. I think Serbia, you look at their players and you look at the quality they have, there's no chance we're going to compete with a Serbia or a Portugal. Yeah. when qualification is so difficult in the first place, and then there's only one automatic qualification and then another one that goes into playoff. I really think this is a qualifying campaign where we actually need to get back to basics. We need to get a structure in place whereby we actually have an identity about what it is we do, and then you're looking to maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the line where you have better players coming through, that you have something in place for them that allows them to play good football and allows them to progress, and then we look to get results. And that's where I would see us at this moment in time. And I think some of the pressure on Stephen Kenny, I understand some of it, but I also think we actually need to be realistic about where we are as a country and what has happened in the last kind of 5-10 years. And in order to take maybe 3 steps forward, we need to take 2 steps back. So yes, you can look at the formation and the players, but I just think we need to be patient at this moment in time, and hopefully then in due course things come good.
David, just following up on that point there made by Paul, and maybe to add in Brian Kerr's thoughts on it, and he said that we can't afford to write off this World Cup. We can't afford to just let it go from a pure financial point of view, because international football is where the money is. And even when you throw in the players and Stephen, like, their ambition is not going to be, because Stephen won't be in a job potentially if he doesn't go and start getting results and start winning games, because that really is what matters. And while it would be great to be able to be in a position to plan for the future, the reality is I don't think you can.
No, like 100%, and like in terms of the reality, it's always been said about, or especially over the last few years, Ireland maybe not having the players. And that's why, like, Stephen Kenny has come in with this. He's tried to be optimistic and try and bring in this kind of way of thinking, whereby trying to be positive about the players that Ireland have, and trying to maybe do a bit more with them. In terms of staying in the job, I don't think he can judge Stephen Kenny and say, well, he's a failure if Ireland don't get a playoff spot, because like it's 20 years since Ireland have been to a World Cup. Do you know what I mean? So, like I would say, if Stephen Kenny would be judged, in my opinion, would be judged a failure over the course of this campaign, is if we don't see what he's trying to do come through over the course of the campaign. And it's not so much talking about like philosophies and all the rest of it. It's just a case of the principles of a team and having a structure in a team and a team knowing how they're playing and actually trying to deliver it. That's what he has to do. And if we see, and I keep on saying this about progress, but like progress for anyone who has watched Irish football over the last few years, progress, of course, listen, it would be great if you're qualifying for tournaments all the time, but like it hasn't really happened. We've qualified for the Euros when it's been expanded. We've got in by the skin of our teeth, but we've got there. Now, it's a case of, well, if you can start qualifying for the Euros on a regular basis, that would be amazing progress, but is it going to happen? And at the moment in this campaign, at the end of it, you would say, well, Ireland play Luxembourg on Saturday, there's Azerbaijan in the group too. You have to be showing your superiority against those teams and showing that structure and showing that base and how you're playing in those games. And then in the games against a Serbia and a Portugal, yeah, it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult, but also showing that you have, for want of a better word, a bit of cop on in the games. And yeah, you know you're not going to be controlling possession, but you can still rely on, as what Paul was saying, that structure and a base of how you are playing and knowing what's going to be happening. Whereas in previous times, that sometimes has not necessarily been the case. So, like, in terms of, personally, in terms of this campaign, you just need to see that an Ireland team progress from a point of view of actually playing good football, looking solid, not looking as if, like, I'll give an example. So in the game, obviously, last night, it's weird, it sounds bizarre to say it, you can see 3 goals. Yeah, it's actually a time where you looked at the team and said, you know what, it actually looks to work, the 3 at the back with the wing backs, with that midfield, things did look to work, mistakes were made, and Ireland were punished for it. And that's what you're dealing with, especially when you're with some of the players who are obviously in Serbia, is in the calibre of some of the Serbian players. So that's what we have to see now. And Saturday is such a big game for Stephen Kenny at the moment. And not so much the fact that there's not going to be no fans in the stadium. I don't think necessarily it's a huge thing in the sense of like everyone getting behind the team and stuff. But I think that would also be a good judge at the moment of, well, how are the public feeling about this Ireland team? Because at the moment, you can't really do it. You're going off certain things that are said on social media, in the press, where there's kind of different camps emerging in terms of what's expected and what's wanted. So you almost need that reality of fans in the stadium. And because the public will tell the FAI what they're thinking about what's happening. And at the moment, we're kind of, you're judging it by obviously what you see on the pitch too. And that's ultimately what it is, what's going to decide Stephen Kenny's fate. And it's also what the FAI want out at the end of this campaign. Like, the FAI don't be budgeting for qualifying for the World Cup. But what they would be looking for is to say, well, is this a manager? Is this a group of players? And it might not necessarily be this group of players. I don't think they're capable of it, who can get to a World Cup. That's what Stephen Kenny has to show over the course of over the next year, essentially, is he a manager capable that is capable of getting Ireland to a Euros and hopefully a World Cup? That's what he's going to be judged on over the course of the rest of this campaign.
Paul, these are the players that we have for now, though, and these are the players that he is going to be taking in to the Luxembourg game, where everybody will be behind him and hoping that they get a win. Are you anticipating that he is going to make any personnel changes ahead of that, which is a must-win game?
Yeah, it is, Marie. I'm not sure we're going to see a whole lot of changes rung in. I wouldn't be surprised if Jeff Hendrick came back in for Jason Malumbi, just given the fact that Malumbi hasn't played an awful lot of football. And I thought there was instances last night where he was running out of the middle of pitch a lot. And I just thought, given Jeff Hendrick's experience, that he might slot in well there beside Josh Cullen. Outside of that, I can't really see too many other changes coming into the team. Are you going to bring a Shane Long in for an Aaron Connolly? I don't think so. I actually thought if we produced anything like we produced last night against Luxembourg, we should have enough to get over the line. And I guess what you do want to try create is a bit of consistency within your lineup and get a back three, if that's going to be Clark or Shane Coleman, get them used to playing with one another and Travers in behind, and try strike up some sort of relationships between a Cullen and a Brown and a Connie and a Robinson. So I can't imagine Stephen's going to go tinkering around too much. I think he would have seen enough last night that he would say, yes, we've enough there to go and beat Luxembourg and hopefully beat them convincingly. And at the same time, like I mentioned, you want to start trying to build those kind of partnerships and relationships throughout the squad. And we're not exactly blessed with options from the bench either, so his hands are probably tied in another respect also.
And just given Connolly going down with cramp and are in the 65th minute and Robinson being a little bit undercooked and Mullumby arguably running out of steam a bit as well, like, do they have it in them now to go and do another important 90 minutes?
Paul. Didn't I heard Stephen Kelly saying on commentary last night, it didn't look great for a young fella of Aaron Connolly's age to be going down with cramp after 60 minutes. He has been starting the football, so you can probably allow him some leeway there. International football can tend to be a bit of a slower game, and you would like to imagine we're going to have the majority of the possession against Luxembourg, so he's maybe not going to have to stretch himself as much. You'd be hoping that he can kind of play in and around the 18-yard box and produce for us in that instance. But it's a fair point. There are players within our squad who haven't been fortunate enough to rack up 20, 30 first-team appearances, and that can sometimes hold you back when you've got to go from Wednesday to Saturday. But I can't imagine Luxembourg, like I mentioned, is going to be the most intense of paces to it, so you should be able to get through at least 60, 70, 80, and then you're hoping by then that we've put the game to bed and you're able to maybe bring the likes of a Jason Knight on, or you have an option of a Robbie Brady. So they should be fine. I can't imagine tiredness is going to play that much of an impact. They're young fellas, their bodies will recover quicker than somebody who's maybe in their early to mid 30s, so I think we should be okay.
What about Travers, David? Just, I suppose, the fact that we are talking about players not having as much first-team football as we would like, and then there was quite a bit of criticism about his performance, and a lot of it, I thought, was a bit over the top, just given his age and the fact that he hadn't played that much football. But is it worth sticking with him again, do you think?
Well, I don't think Stephen Kenny has a choice at the moment, really. Like, I know...
Gavin Bazunu is playing regularly.
Yeah, well, I know Gavin, in the sense of, like, we're talking about experience. I know Gavin Bazunu was playing regularly for Rochdale. When I say Don has a choice, he's taken the, I won't say a punt on Travers. He's put his faith in Travers and given him the jersey. If he feels that you know what, he actually just can't risk it, that maybe his confidence has taken too much of a battering and he has to go with a different goalkeeper, well, then that's another big decision that Stephen Kenny will have to make. And then you kind of wonder, well, what would that do for Travers and for the defence. I think, yeah, like, it was really disappointing for him on a personal level, and also for the team, just because the first goal, really, I don't think you would be expecting the goalkeeper to save that. I think it was a really, really clever finish from Vlahovic. Obviously, the second goal, he's out of position and he's caught out, and maybe the level he's maybe used to playing at, he maybe didn't sense the danger quite right. You kind of maybe thought you could get away with it, and even the same could possibly be said for Darragh O'Shea, centre back. Even though he's playing in the Premier League, he kind of looks at him, and rather than trying to press him or maybe even kind of close him down, he kind of almost allows him just to kind of get the shot away. I think you should stick with Travers, because just from the point of view of, I think it's a game against Luxembourg where I think Ireland will have the majority of the ball, and it's not a game where you expect Ireland to be peppered and the goalkeeper to come under real scrutiny. I think you have to show, you've shown faith in him in the Serbia game. If you still back him, then you go again with him. The issue, I think, is going to be in this game as well. And again, Paul mentioned it earlier, but the creativity and maybe the lack of tempo in this game on Saturday, if that's going to be the case. Like, even though Luxembourg had a horror result against Qatar yesterday as well, losing 1-0, and like, hopefully catching them at a good time where their confidence could be dented from that, you would think. But if his team just sits in against Ireland, that's where you think you could struggle. Like, Ireland kind of were given a bit more space last night, just because Serbia, obviously being a better team, were kind of maybe stretching themselves a bit more too, trying to go at Ireland. But I think that could be a bit of a struggle. That's why I think it's important that there's patience on Saturday from the team's point of view, and that if there is no early goal, that the heads don't drop. Obviously, there'd be no crowd there to make things maybe slightly worse. But I do think it could be a struggle of a game in the sense of trying to break them down or create, and just because there is a lack of creativity. But if they can increase that tempo and keep the tempo up and hurry Luxembourg and put them under pressure like they did with Serbia, and that's where, like, doing a high up the pitch, not letting Serbia just drop deep, you know, doing a high up the pitch and putting them under pressure there, that's where you would hope Ireland will see some joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, just on that, there is negativity about inexperienced players, and like you mentioned, Stephen Kelly saying that players looked a bit tired on the 60-minute mark, but we did score twice. The kind of drought of scoring goals is over at least. You know, that must be a plus for morale for the squad.
Yeah, and Marie was asking earlier, like, will the players take confidence? I think when you look back at the goal and the nature of the goal and how we created the chance, that's something that you definitely have to take confidence from. And there was different personnel involved in different instances during the game. It wasn't as if we were just a one-trick pony or we were going down through the same avenue or the same player. There was bits and pieces there of interchange and moving the ball. And, like, David mentioned there that opposition sit in, but actually what I thought we did well yesterday was we drew the opposition out. Like, that's what you do when you keep the ball. You don't keep it for the sake of it. You keep it to suck the opposition out, to move them about, to then create space to get in behind. And we did that well at times last night, Donica. We did it well at times, and we created a chance that we scored ultimately from. And I think the more you can see that happening over, please God, on Saturday against Luxembourg and then against Qatar, well, then you can start to build confidence and build faith within the team and within the squad that you're doing the right things and that the fundamentals of what you're trying to do, you can actually see out in the pitch. So that would give me bits of encouragement, because I think in previous campaigns, we were all getting very excited when the ball went out for a throw-in or a corner kick, because that was literally our only avenue to go. Now at least we're starting to see bits and pieces from open play where we have actually started to create chances.
They seemed really well coached as well, you know, the bits that were positive, David. And you just have to think, considering how little time that Stephen Kenny would have had with them, that, you know, even every single extra hour of every day that he does get with them, that we're going to see improvement once again.
Yeah, that's what has to happen. It has to be like international. Like, you have to, it has to be just clear, concise, sharp messages out on the training pitch. And then obviously, I know they have various meetings and stuff around the camp and the hotel and stuff like that. And even figuring out little things like just chatting to Andy Reid, who obviously now was the Nottingham Forest under 23 manager, and it was something very interesting that he said, and I kind of, maybe naively on my own part, I never really thought of it this way, but he was sort of saying for him, a big thing for him was figuring out the best way to get through the players quickly and how they learn. So he was going through little things like, well, some players actually gone and shown them on the training pitch that it clicks with them and they're good. Other players, you need to actually show them, sit them down and show them on a screen, and that's how they learn quicker. Other times it's just like talking to them face to face. And I know it sounds really basic, but that's something that as well that is important from Stephen Kenny and even the coaching staff, is figuring out quickly how individual players learn and how best to get those messages across. Because yeah, you're right, you don't get much time, it seems, in terms of on the training pitch, because it's a lot of games now in the window. So that's going to be a big thing over the court again over the remainder of the campaign, is getting those right messages across and doing it in the right way that gets through to the players quickly.
Yeah, and we had that small matter of COVID as well, which was interrupting a lot of the progress that was being made. So, Paul, just final thoughts to you. When you take into account the players that we had, the performance, the results, the opposition, just in general, how are you feeling now as we head into this next game on Saturday?
I'm still trying to be a bit realistic of where we're at. Some of our players are playing in the Championship and some of them aren't even playing all that regularly in the Championship.
Yeah.
So that for me kind of makes me take a step back and go, okay, I'm wanting to be optimistic and I want us to push on and potentially challenge at the top end of this group, but I think it's very unrealistic. So I'm hoping just that we can build from game to game and we can start to see, like Dave said, some of the progress within what it is Stephen Kenny's trying to do. And if we can start to put then maybe a string of performances and most importantly results together, well then maybe we can start looking at the Serbia game at home and saying, well, we're in a much better place now to put up a better fight against a team like that than we were maybe 3-4 months ago. So if we can build a bit of points and a bit of confidence, I think then we can start to look to those other fixtures and maybe give them a bit more bash. But I think for the moment, we have to beat Luxembourg. A good performance even against Qatar would build confidence, and you just go from there, Marie.
That's it, David. Like, you know, there are a huge amount of players missing, and in 6 months' time or in September when the games start coming around again, it could be a very different team. It just feels a little bit early to be writing things off.
Yeah, and but as well, like that is as well the nature of international football. It's something that Stephen Kenny is going to have to just deal with, really. You know, like I don't think you can just, as I said, you mentioned COVID, like, you don't think you can dismiss the impact that has had on being able to kind of select certain players. But like, that's just as well, like, with injuries and players in form, that's just the nature of management. And like, I think Darragh O'Shea was the only player who started the last competitive game against Bulgaria. So that kind of shows you, like, there'll be 10 changes. That kind of gives you an indication of how things had to change as well. And but that's just, like, it's just, I don't think it's a, it, from my point of view, I don't think injuries and players being informed, sometimes you just, for an international manager, that's what you have to deal with. And that's where it comes back, I would say, as well, to what Paul was saying, is where you, players who are all coming into the squad know exactly what is required of them and not, can almost just slot into a system as quickly as possible, because there is always going to be churn with international football. It's just the nature of it, and that's why it is so important that the messages that Stephen Kenny and his coach and staff are getting across, that the players basically know exactly what is required of them. And that's that. And by the end of again, what Paul was saying is a point as well, just from game to game, where you see improvement, and hopefully there's going to need to be results too. That's what's basically needed now over the next little while.
Well, I've booked my hotel room in Qatar anyway, and I'm very happy that I'm going to be heading there in 2022.
I hope it was on booking.com with free cancellation.
Might have been. Okay, Paul Curry and David Snaith, thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully you'll be in a very positive mood after the weekend.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, the dust has settled on Ireland's fantastic performance over England to look back at our Six Nations campaign and drive us forward for the Pro 14 final and a South African tour. We are joined by Ulster Ireland and Lions hard-hitting back row Stephen Ferris. Fez, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks, Donegal. What a weekend of rugby. We've got another one in store this weekend, so it just keeps on coming. It's absolutely brilliant. I think it's the only thing that's keeping a lot of people going at the minute, especially with all the lockdowns and everything across the country. So, yeah, more rugby on the TV this weekend, and it'll be interesting to see if France can win the Six Nations, and if your side, Munster, Donegal, can win the Pro 14.
We'll get to it. But it was interesting. We were just chatting to David Snaith, and he was making the point about how players learn and coaches teach. Did you think we saw the handover from the Joe Schmidt time to the Andy Farrell era this Saturday, or last Saturday?
Donegal, like, I've watched the game back a couple of times, and, you know, Ireland, the positive thing to come out of that performance was I feel that Ireland can get better, and Ireland can certainly play a bit better. England were extremely poor, and you got to take that into account when you analyse the game. And, you know, the errors that they made, the big players that usually stand up and are counted for them week in, week out, like the Vunipola brothers. And, you know, they were so far off the pace, and Ireland capitalised that, took advantage of it. And, you know, that set play where Conan tapped it back down inside to Keith Earls, you know, that's something that you would associate with Joe Schmidt in the Joe Schmidt era. So, maybe there's a few learnings along the way, but by, you know, when they had ball in hand, those tip-on passes, getting over the gain line a lot more, brilliant to see a few players really playing well. I think that was a 30-80 minutes in a row for Johnny Sexton, so he silenced a few critics, including myself. And it's just, it's all positive for Ireland, but as I said, I feel that they can give a lot more, which, again, is another positive.
When you look back over the competition, who for you was the standout Ireland player?
There's a couple, isn't there? You know, obviously, being an Ulster man, there's Ian Henderson, who, you know, toured with the Lions in 2017, didn't get a test spot, but he was brilliant. You know, I think he came on 25 minutes into the Wales game and looked slightly off the pace, hadn't had much game time over the opening couple of couple of weeks, and he just grew into that shirt in the second row, calling the lineouts as well. He's been absolutely brilliant. I thought against England and Maratogi, he certainly stood up to that challenge and was probably the better second row on the pitch. So, yeah, from an Ulster perspective, definitely him. I think Tadhg Byrne has been sensational, just getting game time. And some of these players, Donica would agree. Donica was certainly a brilliant example of this. Donica would have played every single week just to keep, you know, keep in the groove and finding form, and you know, turning our attention to the Pro 14 this week. It'll be interesting to see if some of those guys who are off the back of four or five consecutive games in a row at Ireland at a really intense level, whether or not they want to keep backing it up. And Donica, as you know, they probably will, but there's a couple anyway, Marie, who certainly stood out from an Irish perspective. And just a quick mention to Robbie Henshaw as well in the centre. He was just sublime at stages throughout the Six Nations.
You've given a nod there to the game that we're going to be talking about shortly, the Munster-Leinster one. But remember when we were chatting just before the start of the Six Nations and we were talking about Tadhg Byrne and we weren't even sure if he was going to be starting. Mm-hmm. And now fast forward to now and he's like a nailed-on line starter. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, it is phenomenal, isn't it? And like, we all knew he had this ability about him. Like, when he signed for Munster, he obviously won the league with Scarlets, and he just sort of didn't grow into the Munster jersey like he did in the Scarlets one. And maybe it's just taken a bit of time. Maybe it's taken a few good words from the coaching staff to give him the belief that he is good enough. And he's found his groove, and you know, he's just playing really exceptional rugby. Everything he touches seems to turn to gold on both sides of the ball. And yeah, I'm expecting big things for him. I've been asked a few times about selecting back row players for the British and Irish Lions, and you know, if there's six or seven, maybe eight back rowers, I would certainly have him there. I think it, you know, going into a test match against South Africa and having Tadhg Byrne in the second row, I certainly feel that he'd be better utilised in the back row, especially he's a really good line-out option. So for me, he's just come on leaps and bounds, hasn't he? And maybe the likes of Paul O'Connell and Andy Farrell are certainly getting the best out of him.
And no one's mentioning his size anymore. It was such a hot topic only a few weeks ago. Yeah.
I think with the number six on his back, he just suits that role, and he has such a big engine. Like, he really is, you know, covers some amount of grass. But again, Donegal will understand this when you're coming up against huge South Africans, you know, weighing in at 125-130 kgs in the second row. When it comes to scrummaging, as we witnessed at the Rugby World Cup final, those extra kgs certainly help. And I just feel that he's better suited to the back row, and he can certainly fill a job in the second row, but for me, it's back row. I don't know what Donica thinks.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting, Fez, because I think for Ireland, that's a brilliant position for him, but I'm blinkered with my want for Munster, and at the moment, when you don't have someone like Orgy Snaiman and you're waiting on the development path for someone like Keane Healy and Thomas O'Hearn, with a back row like we have at Gavin Coombs and Peter O'Mahony and CJ, you know, you just have to fill that void and get your best players on the pitch. So I think he could be in a difficult spot, that he could actually put his name forward for the Lions tour in that worst position that you can be in, as the ultimate utility player, which is, you know it, Fez, you just don't want to be known at it, because you become perfect for sitting on your arse.
You're 100% right. And no, there's nothing worse, especially like back three players as well. Oh yeah, you can cover all three positions, you know. And then it comes to signings. You know, Ulster signed a guy called Matt Fadez, who's played a number of games over the last couple of seasons. And you know, he was signed and he could play all across the back line. And I was like, that's never good when somebody's signed and, you know, they're releasing the statement that he can play all across the back line. And he's also played sevens as well. And you know, he's drifted out of the Ulster team, hasn't really cemented a place. So, you know, somebody like Tadhg Byrne, I think if the coaches asked him where he wanted to play, he would just say, get me onto the pitch. And I think that's what Munster will be trying to do over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. It was confirmed that the Lions will tour South Africa. Fez, we were lucky enough to do it. Just from a player's point of view, 8 weeks on tour, you know, take COVID aside, how good for the playing group is that? You know, just being able to build those bonds. I just remember yourself and a strange one, Andy Powell, really hitting it off. There wasn't fake tan in common, but commonly cool was your draw more so than anything.
Yeah, like, where does the time go, eh? It's back around again in South Africa. And, you know, brilliant statement released by the British and Irish Lions that the tour is going to go ahead. Who knows what the travel restrictions will be for visiting fans. We all know that, you know, the British and Irish Lions is a touring side, so, you know, to have it in South Africa, it does make sense. But it'll be very interesting to see the logistics around everything. But I think it's just really good news from a rugby point of view. And squad selection is gonna upset a few people along the way, but it's also going to provide massive opportunity for the guys who do get selected. And, you know, you and I were both very lucky to be on that tour in 2009, and what a tour it was. You know, brilliant crack, a good bunch of lads, and we all bought into what the British and Irish Lions was all about. So, you know, the group of players that get selected for this one, well, we'll have a huge job of beating the world champions in their own backyard, and probably without that sea of red supporting them as well. But, you know, huge opportunity, as I said, and they'll come together and fight hard for one another. And you just never know what you can achieve when you put in the hard work.
Fez, do you miss how bipolar we were in the fact that last week we would have been in a dressing room and everyone would say, let's put our body on the line for CJ Sander, and this weekend in a Pro 14 final, lads with blue and red jerseys are saying, let's get CJ Sander off the pitch as quickly as we possibly can.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, but that's the rivalries that you want, especially between the Irish provinces. Yet again, it's Leinster and Munster going toe to toe. Leinster, you know, the last five games they've won against Munster. I was chatting Alan Quinlan during the week there, and he was saying, you know, if it's six losses in a row, you know, that's in the history books. That's never actually been done before. So that's an incentive for Leinster, but it's also an incentive for Munster to not let that happen and to get absolutely stuck into the Leinster in their own backyard. Of course, no fans there, nobody's spilling out of the pubs in Balls Bridge towards the RDS, and I think that'll be playing in Munster's favour for sure. And if they can keep it tight and stick tight with the likes of Joey Carberry possibly coming back in, I know teams are announced tomorrow around lunchtime, so lots of anticipation around team selection. And I suppose, Donegal, especially for Leinster, because there's so many guys away with Ireland, but there's so many guys who have put in 80-minute performances week in, week out. Like, you could rhyme somebody like Michael Bent, you know, who's played maybe 90% of the Pro 14 games, and all of a sudden Andrew Porter and Tadhg Furlong are potentially coming back into the mix. So Leo Collins going to have a hard job on his hands of keeping everybody happy. But do you know what? I fancy Munster for this one. Really good squad, playing some entertaining rugby. And I think that centre partnership of Dale Ande and Farrell could upset a few Leinster players and a few Leinster fans.
Tonica, how do you think Munster are going to approach it, just given the fact that a lot of the players coming back will have played a lot of rugby, and there's obviously a Heineken Cup game coming up as well, but will it just be focused on getting that trophy?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%, Marie. It's too long. 10 years is too long for a calibre of a team like Munster to go without silverware. So, and Stephen will know it himself. When you come back from international duty, it's getting yourself up to speed with the plays as quickly as possible. And we spoke about this with Ruby. There's a real emphasis on the players that have been there all year round. A perfect example is someone like Michael Bent. Him actually helping someone like Andrew Porter and Tadhg Furlong to understand their roles perfectly. And it's a mad thing to say, but like, that's what you have in good squads. I remember myself and Paul O'Connell would come back from Irish camp. It'd be someone like Mick O'Driscoll going through the lineups that have worked, that haven't worked, saying that I've looked at Leinster for the last 2 weeks, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what you need to target. My greatest concern, though, Fez, is have Leinster, like you were mentioning there in your chat with Quinny, going six games in a row clear, have they opened up so much of a gap now between Munster and Leinster that it can't be closed?
I don't think so, Donegal. Like, I was asked the question there during the week, is this do or die for Munster? And a lot of Munster fans, and Quinny included, like, said it is. You know, there is so much riding on this game. There's so many narratives coming into the game. But for me, I think it's the way that, you know, Munster have bounced back. You've changed a few coaches over the last number of years, but they seem to have a bit more stability. They seem to be going in the right direction, and they are getting better, which is a huge positive. So for me, if Leinster win this game, I don't think, you know, it's back to square one, back to the drawing board for Munster. It's just going to be more hard work and more effort to try and put things right when they do meet again. I think the games between Munster and Leinster, you know, have been so tight of late also. The bounce of a ball, a last-minute kick, small things, but you got to try and get those to go your way. And I think Munster, with the experience that they've got, maybe bringing in the likes of Keith Earls onto the wing as well. He's in scintillating form. You know, the centre partnership that I talked about, Joey Carberry. The only real concern about the Munster team is Dave Kilcoyne, if he'll make it back in after, you know, his HIA. But apart from that, they're a really healthy squad, Donegal. And I just fancy them to turn Leinster over, especially, you know, Leinster getting turned over by the Ospreys last week. It sort of gives a bit more belief to everybody who'll be following Munster.
So, like, I'm going to be asking you that tomorrow, by the way. So you've 24 hours. When the teams come out, I'm going to be asking you to...
You're coming after me.
Yeah. But give me notice.
Fez is giving me hope here, Marie, and hope is the worst thing to have at the moment. You know, you like, when, especially as a Munster man, you like going into it as an underdog. But Stephen, you mentioned that Munster must kind of keep it tight. What areas? What other areas do you think they need to get right to beat Leinster?
We've seen how much discipline counts over the last 8 weeks in the Six Nations. It is absolutely everything at the minute. Cheap penalties, just giving easy yards for really good kickers like Ross Burner, Johnny Sexton, to knock them over the post or kick them into the corner. And when Leinster get on top of you, they do turn to that power game. They've scored so many tries off mauls, and they've scored so many tries off pick and goes. So you take those two things away from Leinster, you will have a really good shot at beating them. So for me, it's about, you know, huge discipline for Munster. Be clinical when you're given that opportunity, and if you can stop that driving ball and get absolutely tore into them around the break and around the fringes, make that really hard work for Leinster, then I think they've got a chance. But, you know, I'm just waiting for an unbelievable game. You know, two really good sides, deserving sides, to be in the final, topping both their conferences, it's just extremely exciting.
Stephen, our Six Nations is finished, but we have no champions yet, and we will find them out tomorrow night when Scotland take on France. So Wales will be watching on nervously. France need to win by 21 points and 4 tries. I was chatting to Marie about this yesterday. I think they're nearly being rewarded for heading out and eating waffles in Italy by knowing exactly what they need. But do you think you know, they can do that?
They certainly can do it. But I don't think they will. I think if they play this loose game, those 21 points, 4 tries, it will almost play into Scotland's hands. You know, the type of game plan that Scotland have tried to employ over the last couple of years under Gregor Townsend is a bit more of a looser game. You know, that we all can remember the second half against England a couple of years ago. I think the final score was 30 at all. And, you know, they just went for it. And if France get loose, get complacent, try the old UA rugby, then for me, I think Scotland will hang in there. I do fancy France to win. Of course, I fancy France to win. Scotland have never beaten France away in the Six Nations. So for me, it's going to be a French win. But I just don't think that they're going to win by 21 points and secure the championship. I think there's a lot of neutrals out there, Dominic, that want them to do it, that feel that that France have played the best rugby throughout the tournament. That's really hard to disagree with. They've thrown up some epic matches. But for me, Scotland are going to run them a lot tighter than what a lot of the French fans, I'm sure, think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's hope for a great weekend of rugby. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll catch you soon. Quick break, and we're heading stateside to chat to Jeff Shepherd.
FM. Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, time to cross the Atlantic and join our ultimate teammate, Jeff Shepherd. How are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you all tonight?
We're good. Tell me, Shep, are you still walking around with wellies and a rain jacket on?
I saw the sun today for the first time, and I swear it was one of the most glorious sights I've ever seen. It has been a rainy week here across the American South. I saw some guy, Noah, stocking up on animals down the street. I mean, it was a lot going on.
But lucky, Shep, you've had March Madness to keep you entertained.
Yes, it is. You know, probably pulling for one of the five religious schools that are still in. But that was a segue, kids. Y'all want to write that one down. That was pretty good. There's five schools still in March Madness in the Sweet 16 that have some sort of religious affiliation with them. I was not planning on starting there, but here we are.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got Loyola Chicago, our old friend Sister G, back in full effect. She's 101. We've talked about her on this program probably each of the last two or three years that the Ramblers have been around. They made the Final Four a couple of years ago, and she had the ultimate confidence last week. She said, if we get by in our second round game, we can beat everybody else in this bracket. And, I mean, look, she's 101. Who's not going to listen to her? And then, you know, the other team we talked about big time last week was Gonzaga out west. Look, guys, they looked and are hands down the best team. I mean, they are now four wins away from going undefeated for the first time since the 1976 season. And it is going to take someone playing an absolutely perfect basketball game and getting a lot of help to beat them. They just looked phenomenal.
Very good, Chip. How do you see it all going at the end of the NCAA?
Well, I mean, again, guys, it's kind of hard to pick against Gonzaga. I think, you know, there was a lot of upsets this past weekend. There's some lower-seeded teams that are alive, and not just alive. I mean, they're alive and dangerous. And, you know, it is a cliche, but it only takes one night. I mean, you've already seen the 15 seed win two games this year. That's only the second time that's ever happened. And so to say, oh, well, we're just going to run this guys over because they're a 15 seed, I mean, you just can't think like that. But, you know, COVID and just the parity across the sport has kind of changed everything. But you'd be a fool to bet anybody besides Gonzaga right now. They're just that much better than the rest of the field is right now.
Okay, Shep, I was no altar boy on the pitch myself when I was playing, but respect for the referee was always important. In the National Hockey League, Tim Peel hasn't helped himself out. He was caught in mic.
Yeah, this is a crazy story. He had a hot mic on, and he basically said, you know, he was wearing a microphone, and he said, you know, I was just trying to get a penalty on Nashville, one of the teams in the NHL, a little early. And look, guys, we've all learned this lesson in broadcasting, and you can only learn it one way. Every mic is a hot mic, right? And, you know, he didn't swear or take anyone's name in vain, but, I mean, you know, he said something that really just kind of seemed a little fishy. And, I mean, Donald, I'll ask you the question. I mean, did you ever feel like there was a referee that just had it out for you or for your team, and then you hear this, you got to feel like, oh, my God, I've been justified, right?
It would be wrong of me to name Wayne Barnes.
Well, I guess you're off his Christmas card, man.
Well, Shep, we never asked you about Drew Brees, his retirement. Just, you know, how's it gone down in New Orleans?
It's calmed down a little bit, yeah. I mean, you know, he announced he's going to be moving over into the TV booth next year. So we'll still get to see him and we'll still get to hear him. He'll still keep a house in New Orleans. I mean, look, if he felt like it and he really wanted to, he could be the mayor of the city one day. I mean, he's a successful football player, but off the field, he's done a tremendous amount in both the business and in the charitable community. It's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone to say a bunch of negative things about him. You know, out. So I mean, he just means so much more than just a football player to the Saints and to the Saints fans, and really the entire Gulf South region. And I think though that the Saints have re-signed Jameis Winston, they've signed Taysom Hill again. I mean, that's who your quarterback's going to be more than likely. I don't expect a huge drop off. I mean, those guys have run some breeze the last couple of years. It will be weird to see him not under center for the first time since 2006. But you know, the game goes on, and you've got to adjust with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Shep, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Stay dry as you can, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thanks, Shep.
Appreciate it, guys.
That's it for us, Marie. We're back tomorrow at 6. The brilliant Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm On-The-Go Chicken Bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.